sails. But St. Francis de Sales had, he said there are three aspects to the spiritual life. And he prioritized them in a certain order. He said you only need a cup of understanding, which is, you know, we think we have to have all this knowledge and all this, you know, memory. Sometimes I've been teaching this tradition for 10 years now at least, and maybe more. I don't even want to know. And I can't remember. Sometimes I'll forget. Like what I have to go read the wall in our center because we have this chart up that tells you what the Four Noble Truths all are, because I'll forget one of them, or I'll forget one of the list upon list. So he said, you only need a cup of understanding. So I feel better. You know, it's like, okay. He said, you need a barrel of love. And then the final one, I guess he really knew from struggling. I'm getting the bigger drift on him now. This is cool. But he said you need an entire ocean of patience. So what we're discovering in this weekend together is that truth that last night I read that little quote about resistance. And it turns out that wherever there's resistance to anything, there is impatience. The factor of patience is not present. And so our quest for peace is really keying upon patience. So there are factors that bring peace. We know what they are. Acceptance. Just allowing things to be the way they are. Intimacy. That's an odd one. Why does intimacy bring peace? Dogen Roshi, who is a Zen teacher, he said, enlightenment is to be intimate with all things. And that means our dark night of the soul. That means things that irritate the heck out of us. That means all of it. Zorba's full catastrophe, the whole enchilada, we get to open to and make peace with, be present with. Another thing that we cultivate on this cushion is stillness. And we get to see how unstill we can be. How unstill our bodies are. How unstill our hearts are. But we keep planting the seeds. It's interesting. But the Buddha kept pointing back toward this quality of patience, cultivating it in everyday life. I have to say that I don't think we have much problem with patience. If you want patience, you're in the right training ground. Not necessarily this retreat, this thing. Here it is. Here is your training ground, your body. Just becoming ill has been such an amazing, powerful training ground for me, because the illusion that somehow I'm going to blast through and, you know, do things 500 times harder and, you know, lift huge bales of Dharma baskets, whatever I'm supposed to be doing, you know, all that had to go. All of it went. And what I was left with was, upon occasion, how am I going to get up the stairs? From the bottom of the stairs to the top of the stairs. And still at first feeling inside my body that kind of, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on. But learning that what that did was like the story of the elephant falling in the mud hole. I just used my energy for no purpose. So working with this retreat, being on retreat together, we get to see and hopefully start to settle these places of heart and mind that are caught in resistance again and again. So the kinds of things that catch us, I talked about some of them last night. 5 hindrances, common catchers of us all. But the factors that work against peace, that work against patience, as I'm putting them together, Muhammad said patience is the key to contentment, the absolute key. So the factors that work against it, expectations. Have you ever noticed how the mind works when you go about your day, thousands and thousands of expectations are arising of how you should look, how you should be, who you should be, what you should not be. And all of these things can create, when we are unconscious to them, this sense of like taking a mallet and trying to pound ourselves into this mold. One person said ideals and peace are opposite. Just sitting with that thought for a moment. And finding the place inside that keeps reaching toward some sort of ideal. I should be a person who lives like this. When what our friends see is this perfectly delightful human being who's loving and kind, already just the person that they love. So how do we get in these boxes of self-struggle? Expectations. Either we should be one way or we shouldn't be one way. And sometimes right in the middle of an experience, the mind will change itself. I have this friend who travels around the country now, offering spiritual music to people. And before he did that, he wanted to do this kind of Hindu fusion rock and roll. And he kept sending me these tapes. Sometimes he would send me a tape of him just sitting down and singing. He's in the Hindu tradition. He would just sit down and turn on his tape recorder and sing to God for an hour and then put it in a little envelope and send it to me. And I would put it in my tape player and be filled with this peace and quiet and joy and just feeling like I was getting to sit in the presence of God through His love, sit in the presence of the unconditioned through His love. But then he'd get back on this bender, I have to be a rock and roll musician. And he would send me this terrible awful tape. And I would listen to it, and I would be horrified because I knew implicit in that tape, that gift, was his desire for me to then write him a letter. This is before the internet, you know. Couldn't just zip an email off. Write this long, painstaking, heartfelt letter saying, KD, come on, you know. And I couldn't do it. So I called another friend of mine who's a spiritual friend who lived in Minneapolis. He's a judge there and follows a Sufi practice. You know, I was talking to Bob about how hard it is, you know, when you live where there are no other practitioners. Over the years, Columbia has now got one of the larger insight meditation communities in the Midwest. But it wasn't that way when I first lived there. And I didn't, you know, it didn't matter what wisdom tradition, I wanted spiritual friends who understood the contemplative life. So I called my friend Andrew and I said, I have this dilemma I want to talk to you about. And he said, great, this is wonderful. I'm a judge. I enjoy this. So I started talking and just going on and on about the music and how I felt when I listened to one tape and how I felt when I listened to the other tape. And he's patiently listening, not saying a word, which is a tremendous gift. Not one word did he say. Finally, I stopped. He said, do you want my summary judgment on this? Yes, I do. He said, well, there are three Jennies here. Jenny number one says, blah, blah, blah. In complete opposition to Jenny number one, Jenny number two says, blah, 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 blah. In total and complete opposition, and how she got there, I'll never know. Jenny number three completely contradicted everybody and said, blah, 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 blah. And then he said something amazing that I say to you. He said, don't kill any of them. I love them all. So the sense of expectation, you know, even my friend the musician caught in his mental expectation, this is what people of my generation do. They don't go around the country being a kirtan wala. That's not what they do. They're rock musicians. Isn't it? And then finally, one day he just realized, wait, now when he goes, he came to Columbia just to do a concert there, to do a kirtan there, as a favor to me. And we had a venue. He said, don't worry about the venue. It's not a big deal. You don't have to, like, make a big place, just somebody, somewhere, just a yoga studio. I don't care. But sell the tickets so, you know, we can pay for our way there and on to our next job. So, you know, we put it up on the internet, and within 48 hours, all the tickets were gone. And then for the next week and a half, I got crying phone calls. So it lets us know the power of embodying our truth, of dropping those expectations, of stop trying to fix ourselves, make ourselves different, and let the peace be here now. Let it come through us now. To come to this place, to come to this place of allowing, we come through the path of patience. Through this path, it's called a paramita or parami. Of cultivating patience with ourselves, patience with other people. and we begin to see, I'm not half bad here. So another factor working against peace, craving, wanting something so much that the mind will not rest. It could be a thing. It could be an experience. Whatever it is. The third, fear. Fear is huge. Fear comes in and says, you know, what if this happens? What if that happens? Fear is a wonderful thief of peace. Another factor, when we take our seat and realize that we're caught in something from the past, we're caught wishing otherwise about something over the in the past, caught ruminating on that, and sometimes when we take our seat to meditate or to practice, that thought comes up and it keeps, and we keep falling into it and wishing otherwise. So there's this quality you see of moving in to a place where we just cease to struggle, where the struggle is offered up. This weekend, we've learned the qualities that we can use, the witnessing presence that we can use to start to cultivate that quality of peace. So what I'd like to do now is read you a poem that illustrates that quality of peace that comes through that dogged edge of working with patience over and over again. It says, happiness cannot be found through great effort and willpower, but is already present in open relaxation and letting go. Don't strain yourself. There's nothing to do or undo. Whatever arises in the body-mind has no real importance at all. Why identify with it and become attached to it? Why pass judgment upon it and ourselves? Far better to let the entire game happen on its own, springing up and falling back like waves without changing or manipulating anything, and notice how everything vanishes and reappears magically again and again, time without end. Don't believe in the reality of good and bad experiences. They are like the weather, like rainbows in the sky. You know, this is the problem. When our minds believe the reality of this good and bad. I remember once my ex-husband found this wonderful piece of literature. He's a literature professor at the university. And he found this wonderful unpublished piece from a famous writer, and I forget which one. And he put the word out that this had not been published and that it was this powerful thing. You know, people, the New York Times called him, and it was a wonderful experience. And then some other scholar pointed out that it had been published. And it was like this huge ego death that I sat and observed for him. He thought that his entire reputation was destroyed in that moment, his reputation for found text, for finding these wonderful things and offering them to the world. And when we stop, you know, we hear a story like that and we stop and we say, wait a minute. What's happened is someone loved something and wanted to share it. And someone else pointed out, well, it's already been shared, but thank you so much. That's all that happened. But our minds will take these and make them into these huge, big deals. And to learn just these words, don't believe in the reality of good and bad experiences. They are like the weather, like rainbows in the sky. Wanting to grasp the ungraspable, you exhaust yourself in vain. As soon as you open and relax this tight fist of grasping, infinite space is there. Make use of this spaciousness, this freedom and natural ease. Don't search any further. Don't go into the tangled jungle looking for the great awakened elephant who is already resting at home in front of your own heart. Nothing to do. Nothing to force, nothing to want, nothing is missing. Marvelous. Everything happens by itself. So I realize sitting up here that I'm done. This retreat, my talking is done, and it's now time for your talking. So if you would please to stand up, bring your cushions into a circle, and it's your turn to teach.